notice how a weather anomaly arrives, wreaks havoc for a season, and then just vanishes? Now imagine one that permanently alters the thermostat of an entire continent. That's the core idea behind new research in nature communications. When a super El Niño hits, it doesn't just pass through. It can lock the global climate system into an entirely new baseline. So we're not just talking about a bad year of weather. We're talking about long-lasting footprints that stay behind long after the event itself is over. Wait, so it doesn't just bump the temperature up for a warm weekend, it kicks the system into a whole new setting for a decade. Hope, when climatologists talk about a climate regime shift, is that basically what we're dealing with? That's exactly it. In this study, a climate regime shift isn't defined as a permanent tipping point, but as an abrupt, persistent deviation from the climate baseline. Picture ocean temperatures, air temperatures, or soil moisture suddenly stepping into a whole new average state and holding that position for multi-year or decadal stretches. Okay, so what actually knocks a system that huge into a whole new gear? Why are researchers looking specifically at the El Niño Southern Oscillation as the trigger?
Because the El Niño Southern Oscillation is one of the most powerful climate drivers on the planet, it reorganizes atmospheric teleconnections and shifts heat across whole ocean basins. But here's what's critical. Ordinary El Niño events only cause modest, localized bumps. It takes a super El Niño, where sea surface temperatures in the eastern Pacific blow past a 2-standard deviation threshold to deliver a shock large enough to trigger widespread, coherent regime shifts.
Wait, so an ordinary El Niño is just a temporary disturbance, but a super El Niño acts like a massive system shock that actually forces regional baselines into a new state? Precisely. It creates such massive, widespread perturbations across sea surface temperature, air temperature, and soil moisture that the climate doesn't just bounce back once the event ends. It gets locked into a persistent new state. Look at the historical record. We only have 3 super El Niños captured in modern observational data: 1982-83, 1997-98, and 2015-2016. Regular El Niño events happen all the time, but their impact on long-term climate regime shifts is pretty modest and patchy. These super events, though, they leave massive, globally coherent footprints. So a garden variety El Niño is just a temporary bump, but these 3 super events actually reset the baseline? How stark are those changes when you look at specific regions? They are remarkably sharp. Take ocean temperatures in the central North Pacific after the 1997-98 event. The average winter sea surface temperature dropped abruptly by about 0.8 degrees Celsius and stayed down. Or look at soil moisture in central Australia. After 1997-98, it jumped from a 20-millimeter deficit to a 40-millimeter surplus. Then, after the 2015-16 event, it flipped right back to severe drought.
That's not just a wet year or a dry season. It's basically the climate baseline jumping tracks.
That is precisely what happens, and it hit terrestrial systems worldwide. The 2015-16 event caused record heat and a multi-year soil moisture deficit in the eastern Amazon, alongside abrupt air temperature jumps across East Africa and the maritime continent. When scientists ran change point detection algorithms across decades of global data, the years right after these 3 super El Niños showed the highest concentration of climate regime shifts on record.
It really reshapes how we think about these events. They aren't just brief weather anomalies that fade away. They're systemic shocks that lock in long-term global changes.
Here's what I don't get. Super El Niño events themselves mature in winter and fade out relatively fast. How does a sea surface temperature anomaly actually survive the summer? You would think the summer sun would warm the ocean surface right back up and completely erase that cold footprint.
That's the intuitive picture, but the ocean has a clever way of storing memories. Picture a hidden basement beneath the waves. During boreal winter, A super El Niño triggers strong cooling in the central North Pacific through atmospheric teleconnections. When summer comes, the very top layer of water does warm up, creating a shallow surface cap. But that cold anomaly isn't destroyed. It gets trapped directly underneath in the subsurface ocean, quietly waiting out the warm months.
Okay, so it sits in the deep, dark basement all summer, totally out of sight. What pulls it back up to the surface?
Seasonal mixing. When autumn turns back into winter, surface temperatures drop and strong winter winds churn up the ocean. That causes the upper ocean's mixed layer to deepen significantly. As that surface layer pushes downward, it re-entrains, or drags up, that trapped subsurface cold water back into contact with the atmosphere. Climatologists literally call this process the re-emergence mechanism.
Right, so the cold anomaly goes stealth for the summer, and then re-emerges like clockwork in winter. And that recurring loop is how a one-year event locks in a multi-year shift?
Precisely. We saw this exact mechanism in action after both the 1997/98 and 2015/16 super El Niños in the central North Pacific. By storing heat or cold in the subsurface layer, the ocean effectively turns a single seasonal shock into a lingering multi-year regime shift. It can even push entire decadal patterns, like the Pacific Decadal Oscillation, into a whole new phase.
But the wild part is, these massive ocean anomalies don't just stay out at sea. When a super El Niño kicks off, it reshapes global atmospheric teleconnections, dragging land surface temperatures and soil moisture across entire continents into completely new baselines. It's basically a dry sponge suddenly trapped under a running tap, or vice versa. The baseline itself shifts. Look at Central Australia. After the 1997 Super El Niño, average soil moisture leaped from a 20-millimeter deficit to a positive 40-millimeter wet state, flipping a drought into a years-long wet period.
Wait, so it can flip both ways depending on the event? Because after the 2015 Super El Niño, Australia swung right back into severe drought. And over in the eastern Amazon, that same 2015 event triggered record heat and a prolonged soil moisture crash. How does soil hold on to a shift like that?
It comes down to land atmosphere feedbacks. In a wet region, dry soil means less evaporation, which cuts off local rainfall and keeps the ground parched. In dry zones, soil moisture changes alter atmospheric pressure and moisture convergence. The land basically develops a memory that outlasts the El Niño phase itself.
Right. And the strange part is how abrupt it is. You see surface air temperatures in East Africa jump after an event because follow-on La Niña patterns lock in high-pressure systems, turning what should be a temporary seasonal spike into a persistent multi-year heatwave regime.
Exactly. Whether it's Central Asia having a multi-year drought abruptly terminated, or the maritime continent locked in elevated heat, these super El Niños rewrite the local climate baseline on land for years.
Okay, but everything we've looked at so far is based on historical observations. As global temperatures keep climbing, what do climate models say about the future? Do these super El Niño triggers get even worse?
They really do. Researchers ran warming scenarios like SSP 3-7.0 across 100 ensemble simulations in the CESM2 climate model. Historically, a super El Niño increases the global probability of a regime shift in ocean and air temperatures by about 20% compared to regular years. But in a warmer world, that boost is greatly amplified. The spatial footprint expands, and sudden multi-year shifts become far more common.
Wait, looking at those future projections, the soil moisture numbers stand out. In a high warming scenario, do super El Niños still hold the monopoly on driving these soil shifts? Surprisingly, no. The models show that under severe greenhouse warming, the land system becomes so sensitive that even non-super El Niño years trigger soil moisture regime shifts at rates comparable to super El Niños of the past. Warmer air and shifting precipitation essentially supercharge the land-atmosphere feedback loop.
So the land becomes a hair trigger on its own. What is driving that same future escalation in the ocean? Imagine the top layer of the ocean getting shallower. Warmer surface waters thin out that mixed layer, reducing heat capacity, so ocean temperature anomalies can reemerge winter after winter. Combined with agreement across CMIP6 models, the takeaway is clear. Global warming doesn't just intensify the immediate storm, it makes these multi-year regime shifts far more frequent and widespread. Right, and the strange part is where the paper takes a step into even higher stakes. Up to this point, we've been talking about regime shifts in air temperature or soil moisture, changes that last a decade or more, but are technically reversible. But super El Niños can also act as triggers for severe, potentially irreversible tipping points.
Right, because we're not just altering a local weather pattern here. We're talking about massive planetary structures, like Arctic sea ice and Antarctic ice shelves.
Precisely. Arctic sea ice has already experienced a regime shift in its baseline thickness from background global warming. When a super El Niño detonates, it alters polar atmospheric circulation and ocean temperatures in both hemispheres. That loss of ice triggers positive feedback loops, like reduced surface albedo, where open ocean absorbs solar heat instead of reflecting it.
And the Antarctic side gets particularly scary, doesn't it? The paper notes how warming shelf oceans threaten massive ice structures.
It really does. In extreme cases, losing regional sea ice removes the buffer protecting Antarctic ice shelf fronts from ocean swells. That can trigger a sudden transition from a quasi-stable ice shelf to a catastrophic, large-scale disintegration, which feeds directly into sea level rise. So a brief climate spike in the tropical Pacific ends up pulling a trigger at the poles that could permanently reshape global coastlines? That is the fundamental challenge researchers are facing. Where is that boundary between a long-lasting regime shift that eventually resets and a tipping point where the Earth system crosses a critical threshold into irreversible change?
So when you step back and look at all of this, the ocean heat reemergence, the decade-long soil moisture drops, the model projections, the fundamental takeaway is that super El Niños aren't just intense, temporary weather disturbances. They act as catalysts that can abruptly shift an entire region's baseline climate state for years at a time.
Okay, here's the thing that really brings this home for socioeconomic systems and communities. Most infrastructure, water policy, and agricultural planning are built on the assumption that extreme events are brief anomalies. If a super El Niño persistently shifts that baseline overnight, standard emergency aid just isn't going to cut it.
Spot on. If a regional water manager assumes a post-El Niño dry spell is just a one-year spike, they'll wait it out. But if it's a persistent 10-year soil moisture regime shift, that requires structural overhaul. That's why the authors argue that identifying these highly sensitive regions, like Central Australia, the Amazon, or East Africa, is vital. It allows us to design targeted early warning systems tailored to specific regional vulnerabilities before the shift occurs.
Right. So instead of just reacting to a disaster after the ocean warms, we can implement proactive adaptation strategies beforehand. We alter crops, reinforce water grids, and protect ecosystems based on where we know the climate memory will hold.
Exactly. As greenhouse warming intensifies the impacts of super El Niños, these abrupt transitions are projected to become far more widespread. But having early warnings means we don't have to be caught off guard by the long-term climate footprint these super events leave in their wake. It gives human societies and ecosystems a real chance to adapt.
That's a vital shift in perspective, moving from watching the immediate storm to preparing for the decade that follows. Super El Niños aren't just temporary weather spikes. They step the climate into a new baseline. And with global warming, those shifts get amplified, making adaptation urgent.
Right. And the open question is whether these system shifts remain reversible, or if we're crossing thresholds into permanent change. Either way,
Early warning systems are going to be critical.
Thanks for spending time with us today. Take care out there.